You referenced your house. That house was your residence, I think, in 1959.
Yes.
That was before the airport.
About the same time, within a year or two.
Describe the house that became your personal residence.
Well, I'd purchased a two-acre site on 47th Street between Lewis and Utica. It had 40 native pecan trees, and these were very big trees. They were very mature. Trunk diameters 2 and 3 feet. We wanted this house in these trees.
Mm-hmm.
That meant that some of these trees were within 5 feet of the house, and that posed a certain danger because we knew limbs would fall one day. So we got Al Sonnock to design a steel house. And that did happen later. There were big limbs that fell on it, but it didn't make a dent. Minor roof repairs, and that was it. But we had a large family on the way. I was very interested in privacy and community. So we had very, very small bedrooms for each kid, and then larger space for community or living together. I wanted it to be a passive solar, which means that we take advantage of southern exposure with proper protection. You can get deep sun penetration in December, but no sun at all in the house in June. So we had a glass wall that was 8 feet high and 58 feet long, floor to ceiling. Then we also took 57-degree well water, which we found at 19 feet, and used that for cooling for the summer. Then we voided that water into a swale. They went to the back of the lot to feed the horse and develop a great crop of watercress because we had all that cool, continuous moving water. The house was very economical to operate. The air conditioning bill was about 1/4 of what people were spending on homes of that size. And the heating was very efficient. We used a perimeter heating system that distributed air continuously over all the glass surfaces. There was never any condensation, never any noise of fans going off and on. It worked pretty good.
I might point out that people talk today about geoexchange being a new technology. Some people call it geothermal heating and cooling system, and that's what was used at the Guthrie Green. For instance, the entire Guthrie Green, part of its function is 600 tons of heating and air conditioning underneath the green that serves AHA and the Philbrook Museum and all mm-hmm. those projects. But people don't realize that some pioneers like Bob were doing geoexchange or geothermal heating and cooling back then, and it just sort of disappeared for many generations because energy cost is so low that mm-hmm. people would pay more anyway,
mm-hmm.
4 or 5 times more. But mm-hmm. his house was a geothermal or geoexchange house back in the 50s. It's incredible.
Yeah. Why did it come back?
The price of energy. You know, now it makes a big difference. We put geothermal energy or geothermal pipes underneath our parking lot in our office building.
Jeez.
Because my energy bill is less than 50% of mm-hmm. what it would be otherwise.
Amazing.
But it wasn't a new idea that some professors at OSU, Dr. Bose, sort of regenerated this idea back in the 70s and started doing experiments and actually calibrating it. But Bob was doing it by the seat of his pants and intuition, I think. Maybe there were calculations, I don't know.
We probably had a little help from Jim Netherton, who was the mechanical electrical engineer. We depend on engineering a lot.
Would your house be the first house in Tulsa to use that form of heat?
I think that's probably true.
It gained a lot of attention. The style of it, can you talk a little bit about that? Modern design?
Yeah, it did attract some attention. It was published in architectural journals in this country, in Switzerland, and in Germany, because I think it was thought to be probably a different approach.
It was listed in the National Register of Historic Places in 2001 when the house was only 42 years old, and that's significant because it was listed before the 50-year-old accepted age for the structures.
Yeah. About that time, I thought that if we could get the house on the National Register for Historic Places, it might discourage us being demolished, because that happens. People come in, you have a two-acre lot, they buy a house, tear it down and put 3 houses on it. So I went to the Office of Historic Preservation in Oklahoma City, and I said, I'd kind of like to pursue that. They said, well, it has 3 problems. One is it's 40 years old instead of 50. The other is the architect is still alive, I said, well, I think that's going to change. And then they said, the third thing is you need an architectural historian to prepare a nomination. You just don't fill out 3 pages of paper and float it by. So I called Jen Jennings, who was a tenured professor at Cornell and a longtime friend of ours, and she agreed to prepare a nomination. It was 60 pages long with 40 pages of appendix, and Oklahoma City said it was the most complete one they had ever received. It went to Washington and had to be reviewed 3 times by different people in order to make the cut. I think we accomplished our purpose. It was later purchased by Rita Newman, a lady that was very, very wealthy. She liked the house a lot, and after her husband died, she bought the place and spent a tremendous amount of money on the interiors, even including double pane glass for these large areas. After her death, Marty Newman, who was on the board of trustees for the Tulsa Foundation for Architecture and also the National Foundation for Historic Preservation, he's the present owner. So the thing really is in great hands. I think it'll survive for a while.
Well, it is. I drove by it the other day because I knew I was going to be talking to you, and yes, there it is. The style, again, then, is similar to what you took to the International Airport.
Right.
That's interesting that you did that. Nobody pushed back on it. You had a lot of attention to your house. It was cited as the first international-style residence built in Oklahoma and included many hallmarks of modern design.
The term international style is rather interesting. In all my years of education and contact with academia, I'd never heard the word international style. We simply called it the new architecture. But historians tend to put things in pockets, and I guess the word international style could satisfy some purposes like that.
Look magazine, a major magazine back then, called it the International House of Style. So you had national attention for the house.
I didn't know about the Look magazine story. That's new to me. It did because it was on the National Register. With communication being what it is now, it did have a lot of exposure that we wouldn't have expected. For instance, there was some website on the West Coast that selected 10 homes in the United States that were done by unknown architects that they thought were very good. Marcel Breuer done a house of his own. Philip Johnson done a house of his own. We were one of the 10 unknowns that made the cut. And that was all because of the exposure that it is able to get through the Internet and the National Registry.
I don't know the history sequence in time, but were you ever in contact with or have any inspiration by Charles Eames?
His house was before our house in, what, Venice, California? And it was a very interesting house. He wanted to use off-the-shelf building materials, and it was a very, very good house. I later met Charles and Ray Eames, but long after their house was built. That house did attract a lot of attention at the time. I imagine it was built probably in about 50 or 51, maybe.